From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It was very clear in a series of interviews you did last month that you spoke to then Chicago Public Schools CEO Arnie Duncan at least about the process of getting your daughter on a special principals list. It seems like your story changed. Why?
I don't really recall much of the conversation that my wife and I had around the time of our daughter's application.
He's very, very much someone with a pattern of pay-to-play politics in his personal, professional, and political life. For my party to nominate another wounded duck for governor sends this state permanently down the drain.
Senator Dillard's ad for Obama, saying he'd serve our country well as President of the United States, is a non-starter amongst Republicans and, frankly, independents. And with all due respect to Mr. Rahner, his support of Rahm Emanuel doesn't serve well with Republicans in a primary, and it doesn't work to win elections.
I just want to say that I continue to want to have this report released.
You can choose to ignore your counsel's advice, though. It's just that advice, right?
I'm going to tell you what, though. You do not ignore counsel's advice when you're dealing with a federal lawsuit.
Because you're frightened of what's going to come up in it?
Do not put words in my mouth.
Well, no, but I'm asking.
No, stop. Just a minute. Stop that. Do not put words in my mouth. I am absolutely not frightened. And that is even more so why I would like to have that report released.
So have you read it by now?
No, I have not read it. I have not asked for it.
A few more pointed shots in the Republican campaign for governor. This week, the Republican candidates for governor held their final downstate debate. And one of the candidates for governor says a couple of his opponents should pull out now. We'll talk about that on State Week. There in the comments, you heard Treasurer Dan Rutherford and our own Amanda Vinicky having a little chat. Senator Bill Brady in there on why he didn't think his opponents could win. Senator Kirk Dillard criticizing Bruce Rauner, and private equity investor Bruce Rauner trying to explain a story of why he might have helped influence getting his daughter into an elite Chicago public school. He was sparring, so to speak, with Bernie Schoenberg of the State Journal Register. So we'll be talking about those subjects on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS Illinois Public Radio, WUIS IPR State House Reporter Brian Mackey, and Doug Finke, State House Reporter with Gatehouse Media, which includes the Springfield Journal Register and papers in Peoria, Galesburg, and Macomb. Amanda, why are you having a little back and forth there with Treasurer Dan Rutherford?
Well, it really has been an unraveling of the Rutherford campaign since the treasurer himself first came out and announced that there were allegations at the time. He wouldn't say just what they were that were going to be coming forth against him that he said were untrue, and blamed Bruce Rauner for being behind. At the debate put on in the capital city here this week, the treasurer was asked if he had any evidence, if it was in fact Bruce Rauner that had been behind what is now a federal lawsuit that accuses him of sexual harassment and of coercing an employee under the auspices of his state treasurer's office to work for his campaign. And Rutherford said he could not. And he also said that he would not release a report that back on that first Friday when this had all again begin to come to light because of the treasurer himself, he said he was going to hire an independent investigator to look into this. And, you know, it would be the proof that nothing had gone wrong in his office in this regard. Now that former FBI agent has completed the report, the treasurer says he is not, in fact, going to release it. It is funded by taxpayers. He says, in fact, that he hasn't read it himself. So what you heard there was actually following up the debate, trying to get some answers and some understanding about just why it is that the treasurer won't release it. He says that it's under the advice of his attorney, because now that there is a federal lawsuit, that report shouldn't be out there. So that was, I think, trying to get to what a lot of people, even those who have stuck by Rutherford and have been uneasy about the allegations that are coming so close to an election after decades of public service, are saying, hey now, wait a second, this does not pass the smell test. You've lost my good faith.
Yeah, and to me, it's what I've said before. you may be involved in this federal lawsuit, but on the other hand, your whole political future is on the line. And if, in fact, the report comes back and they talk to everybody in your office, everybody says Michalowski is full of baloney, of course you're going to release it. And the only reasonable expectation is, given all the heat that he's getting for not releasing it after saying he would and saying, well, my lawyer says I shouldn't, one has to suspect that releasing it would bring on even more heat. And it just strikes me, no offense to the treasurer, who's done a good job in my judgment as treasurer, but it's hard to believe that someone in his position really doesn't know what's in that report. So he's right. Either dissembling, and we didn't ask the question in the right way. Well, has someone read it and described
read
it
to aloud you? To you.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Or I would suggest he's guilty of campaign, misfeasance, malfeasance. If you're a candidate and there's something out there that could have a big impact on your race, of course you want to know what's in it. It's not going to be, well, I didn't read it, and so I have no idea. As you said, that doesn't pass the smell test.
It's plausible deniability, right? This is like in any movie where the president and the CIA, I don't want to know what you're doing, kind of in the background. So he can say to, when people ask him, have you read it, what's in it, he can say, well, I don't know. I mean, it seems like maybe he could have made a conscious choice to actually avoid knowing what's in it just so he could answer the question in just that way.
Then he's a lousy campaigner, because if you're going to run
campaigner, but I would say that's part of his office. I mean, these are allegations that have to do with his duties as state treasurer. Mm-hmm.
Doug Finke, you were trying to get a word in there.
Well, I think it's kind of important to realize that he brought this stuff on himself. From the very first news conference that he held to talk about unspecified allegations by an unspecified person, and then vowing to do this independent investigation, and then vowing to bring to reveal the results of this, and now backtracking on it. I mean, this is not something that was created by Bruce Rauner or the media or anyone else. These are things that he pretty much brought on himself. And, he's going to have to pay the price for it at some point.
The interchange we heard there, Amanda, that came after the debate when you were asking follow-up questions. Did this issue at all come up in the televised debate that took place the other night?
Yes, just briefly. There were two questions. There were kind of specific questions. What I actually liked about the debate, because I think that's a difficulty a lot of times, is that you have to ask a blanket question. You're trying to get every candidate's response to the same thing so you can find out where they stand. But oftentimes, you might know, or there's something about each individual that would really be great to ask a specific question. And they did that once with each candidate. And that was basically two questions directed at Treasurer Rutherford in terms of, why won't you release the report? And do you have any evidence that Rauner is in fact behind all of this? That this is some sort of setup. And he said, again, just to reiterate, no, he did not have any actual evidence that he could put forth, and no, he wasn't going to be releasing the report. And you heard in the exchange afterwards, I think the treasurer let's use the word testy about it. And in a way, you understand this has to be very difficult. Somebody who's worked hard, who's clearly wanted to be governor for a very long time. And again, the unraveling of a campaign is, Doug said, however, brought it upon himself. And at this point, those sort of questions, I think, are reporters are duty bound to ask at this juncture, given the effect that it has had both on the election and, again, that he is a sitting constitutional officer. And there was a bit more to that exchange where the treasurer admitted that, yeah, he thinks it would be better off for his campaign if he could release the report, but he didn't seem to have any inclination that he was going to go toward that. And then he basically cut off questions. So you're right, Charlie. I mean, I think there were plenty of us that would have said, well, wait, how about a draft? Or I know he was asked who all has read it, and he wasn't able to come up with an answer to that. So he's not necessarily all that welcome to being forthcoming about all of the report and the circumstances behind it.
Yeah, and to follow up on what Brian said, this strikes me as not so much plausible deniability as implausible deniability.
And something that I believe Mr. Rutherford did mention in the debate, and something I think he is out there saying at all the Republican dinners you go to in February, whether it be the Lincoln Day dinner, the Reagan Day dinner, or the President's Day dinner with each of the county parties. He is now just using a phrase about Illinois politics being blood sport.
Yeah, blood sport, hardball. We've heard him talking a lot about it. And yet we continue to see his polling numbers dropping. And he pulled back on a television ad buy. He had made a lot of reservations for a big campaign ad push. And he's kind of temporarily suspended that for now, at least. And so he seems to be indicating that he's going. I mean, he has said, and he seems committed to staying in the race till the end. Obviously, we don't know how that will play out eventually, but he did pull back on television ads, but says he's going to keep campaigning.
Well, and you know, it has gotten nasty. Let's be clear. There is a lot of intrigue and question in terms of this whole treasurer's episode. But that's not it. I mean, you're seeing during the debate, the knives really came out by Senator Kirk Dillard. And once that occurred, then Senator Brady took that upon himself
explain those knives real fast from Senator Dillard.
Well, so for example, saying that, you know, that Bill Brady lost his campaign from the time it came out that there had been a bill that he'd introduced that would basically mass euthanize puppies, and that his stances on teaching creation in schools. And Brady defends it and says, you know, no, I just believe in local control of schools, even whatever that includes, but kind of twisted the words that, Senator Dillard used what Quinn had used against Brady and says, hey, this is why he can't be our candidate. Dillard says that, hey, Bruce Rauner can't be our candidate because there are all sorts of questions as to his involvement in nursing homes. He's been all over the place on the minimum wage. And then, of course, what we heard in the audio there, the clouding, if that is the appropriate term, Rauner denies that he asked for any special favors, getting his daughter into an elite select college prep academy in Chicago by making a phone call to Arnie Duncan, which Rauner's response was, you know, I called Arnie Duncan all the time, which I'm not sure how well that's going to go over either in terms of trying to turn Rauner into the normal Carhartt-wearing guy he portrays himself to be. So the point being, it has gotten nasty. And what you have here, I think, is Rauner, who from the onset has not made a big push in terms of trying to, you know, make friends with any of these other candidates or the establishment, at least in Springfield, of sitting members of the General Assembly. He is the outsider who wants to come in and tear everything up and start it all over. And the other guys fighting for their lives, almost their political lives, at least, to try and take the mantle from Rauner with all of his money. I will say that Rutherford, despite all of this, and obviously there's a glaring exception in that he accuses Rauner of being behind the whole episode. Nonetheless, Rutherford has stayed out of that fray. He said in the beginning he wasn't going to go negative. His commercials, briefly while they aired, were not negative. They were focused on why he's a good guy, and he has not taken those shots during debates.
Now, Doug Finke, following this gubernatorial campaign this week, Senator Dillard did say that he thought some candidates should drop out of the race, being not him, of course. It would be Bill
Brady.
Well,
everyone but him and
right.
Rauner, basically.
I guess we probably know that's unlikely that everyone else is going to follow a request to drop out of the race.
Well, I believe what Dillard said was he thought the party leaders should get involved to pressure the other candidates to get out of the race. I agree with you. I don't think that's going to happen. It also sort of presumes that if all the others dropped out, that their supporters would all flock to Dillard. He might get a fair number of them, but I'm not sure it's fair to say that every one of them would immediately decide to go vote for Dillard if Brady and Rutherford, their first choices, were no longer in the race.
It seems to me like Dillard is almost fighting, you know, 4 years ago. That would have been great if he had the other suburban Republicans who could have gotten out of the race 4 years ago when he was running in the primary. Then he wouldn't have gotten beaten by Brady, and Brady wouldn't have gotten beaten by Quinn. And Dillard very well might be governor today, he thinks, and other people think as well. But it's just such a different electoral landscape this time around. Bruce Rauner has sucked up a lot of the television, all of the television time almost so far. he's gotten a lot of the big donors locked up, as well as his own vast, vast personal wealth that he spent on this campaign. And Dillard, in a lot of polling I've seen, has been fourth. I mean, with Rutherford's recent troubles, that's probably going to change a little bit. But it's funny, I think, in some ways, that Dillard is, you know, kind of trying to elbow himself in there as the natural second place person who can take on Rauner.
And for those at the debate the other night, how did Rauner fare? We discussed briefly his exchange there with Bernie Schoenberg regarding using the influence to get his daughter into high school. Is he emerging out of these things unscathed?
Fairly. You know, I mean, I think the fact that he has emerged from them without making any major mistakes is what is really telling. And again, you're seeing the campaign turn nastier as the election gets closer and Dillard and Brady are really, you know, almost forced to try and attack him. And we've seen since that debate, you know, more stories, more ads come out that are anti-Rauner from unions, again, talking about these nursing home things. But Rauner during the debates, yeah, you know, I mean, he it's not bad. But what I think those who are watching carefully would critique is that there's no substance. Not that you're getting a ton of it from any of the candidates when you're talking about, you know, how are you going to cut the state budget? It's not an easy thing to do in any debate, and no candidate wants to say, oh, this is the horrible pain that I'm going to inflict. But nonetheless, there is some substance there, I think, from other candidates, whereas Rauner, you don't get that. For example, a question about what would you do about downstate, about employees and trying to have them be based in Springfield more, move government back to Springfield versus, as it seems like there's been kind of an exodus to the city of Chicago. And Rauner says, I'd have to evaluate that and make decisions based on cost. To which Rutherford responded, we all know that it's less expensive to operate in Springfield, where leases are cheaper, where parking, everything is cheaper. So what are you saying there? So that's kind of the sort of response, though, that you get from Rauner all the time, is a blanket, I'm going to fight the big union bosses and use my business acumen to get Illinois going right again. Term limits are going to save everything, and not much specifics.
I found it interesting also that, correct me if I'm mistaken, the other three Republicans hung around to talk to reporters afterwards, right?
Oh, yeah.
Correct.
And
Rauner,
Mr. Rauner hightailed it out
Ran.
Of there. Yeah, and I get the sense that he really, really doesn't want to sit down and have to discuss state government with anybody who has a clue, because he really doesn't, beyond the platitudes. Now, maybe that's unfair to him, but he certainly hasn't shown it. A willingness to engage folks who are well-versed on the issues. And maybe I'm a businessman, and when I take over a company, then I learn all about it.
Well, and I think that's sort of like that's his attitude, right? This is the CEO, right? Does Steve Jobs have to know how every transistor, you know, and every iPhone works? He says, well, I can just, you know, have my engineers work on that. I'll have the designers work on this, and I'll just be kind of the ideas man at the top and let other people worry about the details. Now, I mean, Charlie, you can probably speak better than I could as to whether that's a good model for running government. But I think that's the message he's trying to put out there. That's what he's saying he'll
do. And it's a message
if you have some ideas that are relevant and realistic and deal with the situation. But this notion that I'm going to come in and shake up Springfield, I think that's a load of malarkey. I'm sorry, but that's what his campaign guys tell him. And when you see the quotes from his mouthpiece, union bosses is in every other sentence. It's just hammering that home. I don't think, and again, this is probably not fair, but I don't get the sense that Rauner really knows what he would do if he were governor. It's more about winning this prize than it is about here's my plan that I've laid out. Here's how we're going to bring Illinois back.
You're listening to State Week in Review. Just ahead, Republicans put their demands of what they need to at the table. That's assuming they get invited in the first place. We'll explain.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, Gatehouse Media's Doug Finke, and I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Well, Doug, the Republican senators, and there aren't a lot of them in Illinois, as the Democrats hold a supermajority, kind of came out this week and said, these are our demands for budget discussions, yet they may not even have a seat at the table. You want to elaborate and enlighten us?
Well, part of this started with Democratic Senate President John Cullerton on Monday. He had a news conference in which he was talking, laying out how difficult this budget is going to be. Part of that whole production was to kind of put the onus on Republicans, particularly the Republicans running for governor, to come up with some there are more details on how they're going to handle the upcoming budget or how they would handle it, because a big part of the income tax hike expires at the end of this calendar year, and that's going to create a major hole in the budget. The Republicans, Senate Republicans, a couple of days later, and in fact on the day that Governor Quinn would have given his budget address had it not been postponed, came in and said, well, sure, we'll work with the Democrats as long as they meet these conditions. And then they ticked off a rather long list of things, including letting the income tax hike expire, drop any talk about a progressive income tax, revamp school funding, more changes in workers' compensation, basically no growth budget, and I'm probably leaving out a couple of things, but anyway, it was a long list and probably a pretty unlikely list the Democrats would go along with everything on it.
Well, I got to say, you know, Senate President Cullerton loves kind of getting in little political jabs and scoring points, and he was clearly having fun on Monday, poking at some of the candidates, talking about, you know, what their budget proposals. And he, and I think in a way that Charlie would probably be proud of, and at the risk of sounding partisan here, kind of went through a meticulous accounting of all the problems that the state budget is going to face next year. And he sees it as a potential loss of $3 billion in in revenue and a combination of expenses, things costing more next year. And he ticked off a lot of the things that the Republican candidates for governor in particular have been saying, we just need to rein in Medicaid abuse and we need to do this and do that. And he pointed out that a lot of those maybe are a little unrealistic. And yet the candidates, almost as if on cue, replied with the same platitudes that they've been putting out in their television ads and debate points.
And Brian, I want to grab you on another subject. There was a court ruling in Arizona related to pensions, and there's the possibility that that could have impact or influence perhaps with Illinois judges when they have to make a decision regarding pensions in the coming year. Explain that to us.
Yeah, well, so obviously an Arizona Supreme Court decision is in no way binding on the Illinois Supreme Court, but it's my understanding there are only three states that have this same language that Illinois does, New York, Arizona, and Illinois, that say pension benefits shall not be diminished or impaired. And the Arizona had a law that focused on public officials. It scaled back their cost of living raises that they got every year. And the Arizona Supreme Court said, no, that violates the Constitution. So I think that for people who have said that Illinois' law is unconstitutional, this is yet another set of legal experts in the form of the five justices on the Arizona Supreme Court unanimously saying, yeah, we agree with that interpretation that you cannot roll back pension benefits for people who are retired in particular because it violates this phrasing of the Constitution. And I talked to Anne Lucene, who's an authority on the Illinois Constitution. She's a law professor. She was actually on the research staff at ConCon in 1970 when the current Illinois Constitution was drafted. And she said, you know, it's interesting. It's something that people should really sit up and take notice of.
Well, time for us to go to notes from the field. And we'll go to the State House and we'll start with Amanda Vinicky.
Well, you had former U.S. Congressman Mel Reynolds of Chicago, who has been frequently doing business in Zimbabwe, found that he's not so welcome in that country anymore. He was arrested on or charged with pornography. That charge has now been dropped, but there do appear to be some immigration issues, and he will soon be deported from Zimbabwe. That, of course, is Mel Reynolds, who was ousted from his congressional seat for a whole lot of wrongdoing, replaced by Congressman Jesse Jackson Jr., and we all know that he now is serving a prison sentence. So not a great history of that congressional seat there.
Brian Mackey.
Yeah, there is a piece of legislation that came up this week on something that's kind of inartfully termed revenge porn. This is where a jilted ex-spouse or ex-boyfriend, ex-girlfriend would post compromising photos of somebody online as a method of revenge. And this is, in one sense, one of those things where Illinois lawmakers want to make something that's illegal a little bit more illegal. But in this case, it would make it a felony. People have a sort of a stereotype. These are mistakes of youth, young people taking photos of themselves that they probably shouldn't do. But there was actually a very compelling witness who was down here saying she was in an abusive relationship. It's something she consented to only to keep her abusive husband from, doing worse things. And so it was a pretty sympathetic witness. And it looks like this something that could be headed to passage here in Illinois.
And Doug Finke.
There's another bill working its way through the legislature that would allow I believe it's four-time offenders for drunk driving to be able to get a license back under certain circumstances. Interestingly, the bill is supported by two major anti-drunk driving groups, I believe on the premise that if there is a provision on the books that has a lot of restrictions on it for repeat drunk drivers to at least get a provisional license, that's better than having repeat offenders simply driving without a license out there.
And I wanted to bring up one other subject. Seemed like we had a few things higher education related this week. Smoking on college campuses, minimum wage on college campuses at Southern Illinois University, and then a new president at Southern Illinois University. Randy Dunn, a former administrator at SIU, a former state school superintendent and a superintendent of schools in a Central Illinois district, will soon become the president of Southern Illinois University. And he'll be leaving a post at Youngstown State, where he hadn't been very long, 7 months or something like that. They're going to hold him to the 6 month out in the contract, so it'll be well into August before he starts at Southern Illinois University, replacing Glenn Pichard, former Democratic congressman and former Democratic gubernatorial candidate, who came out against a minimum wage increase in Illinois. Pichard. Brian, speaking against the minimum wage in Illinois, saying that the school can't afford a minimum wage hike.
Yeah, that's right. He basically says that SIU already pays their students above minimum wage, $8.50 an hour. That's 25 cents more than Illinois' minimum wage. And he says that this increase, if you push it up to $10 an hour, it would cost the university an additional $2 million a year, money that they don't have because of state cuts, he says.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to our guest, Doug Finke of Gatehouse Media. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.